This episode is sponsored by HelloFresh, and I think we have a coupon code for that, don't we?
Yep. If you go to HelloFresh.com and use the promo code VERYPINK, you get $30 off your first week.
And we have both been using HelloFresh, mm-hmm. and we're pretty excited about it. I got my box, and everything comes... Well, the thing that I was really excited about is that each recipe has its own little bag with all the stuff inside of it, mm-hmm. and it's all recycled and recyclable materials and pre-measured, and it's all right there.
Mm-hmm. I love it because I've tried other kits and things like that, and this one, everything's in the bag. So when I'm ready to cook, I just grab that bag, and it's super convenient because I don't have to go to the store. It's I can schedule my delivery day, and I can readjust which plan I want, because sometimes we want the classic plan and sometimes we want the family plan.
Right. The recipes are all really good. I have got mine right here, and we were just looking at the pictures. Mm-hmm. Sweet as honey chicken, cherry drizzled pork chops, and classic beef chili.
I know. I was just like, I want that cherry pork chop meal.
I know. It looks really good. But I'm really excited about this because I realize I like cooking. I don't like shopping. And yeah. I don't like deciding what to make.
Yes.
And I don't have to. I've got a HelloFresh box full of food and ideas.
Yes. And it's simple. It won't take you that long either.
How long do they take?
30 minutes.
That's right.
Sometimes 20 minutes.
That's right. So HelloFresh, there's more information if you visit the show notes, and with including the coupon code. Mm-hmm. What is it again?
VERYPINK.
For
$30 off at HelloFresh.com/VERYPINK.
Very good. Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with Casey.
Hi there.
Casey is the media manager here at Very Pink, and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, just email it to podcast@verypink.com, and please tell us where you're from. And the show notes for this episode can be found by going to verypink.com and clicking the podcast tab at the top of the page. And this is episode 84. So everything we talk about will be linked there, and we'll be linking for sure because Casey did an interview.
I did. This was fun. I talked to someone from Australia.
You always have these interesting people. You're just trying to get as many different accents on the show as possible, aren't you?
I am.
Okay. Well, besides being from Australia.
I would love to go to Australia next time.
Okay.
So I talked to Pat from Neural Networks, and it's a mouthful for me to say.
Neural Networks,
neural
like brain.
Neural Networks.
Neural networks.
Exactly.
Okay, you know what? It's all in the show notes, just yes. Like I said. Okay.
So it's a really interesting story about how it came about. So I'll leave that in the interview. But they are asking for people to knit neurons. And what they do is they're going to be at the Cambridge Science Festival in Cambridge. And they take all these neurons that knitters make and create a brain out of it. And it's
crazy.
To demonstrate how doing something like knitting is good for your brain. And it's just, it's a art, science.
How do you find these people?
I am really good at Googling. No, I don't remember how.
What did you Google? Like knitting brains?
No. I don't know. I spend too much time probably on social media and it started popping and it led me.
I'm not complaining. No. This is great. I'm really excited. Let's listen.
Okay.
I'm Pat Pillai and I live in Sydney, Australia. I'm the founding artist of project called Neural Networks, Craft a Healthy Brain. I'm also a laboratory scientist. Before I go any further, I'd like to thank some of the other people who are involved in this project because it's mainly volunteer. My partner in the project, artist Rita Pierce, has been with me from the beginning, and Jackie Randalls, who's the manager of an Australian government organisation, Inspiring Australia, who's been there for us and really helped us with networking with the neuroscience community. So now I've said my thank yous. And also all the other wonderful people who there's so many, you just have to go to the web page and look, see who they all are.
So give us a rundown of what Neural Network is.
So Neural Networks is actually it's a community art. We say a community art project, but it's really a community art science collaboration. that uses knitting and yarn craft to promote mind and brain health. It's based on the principle that yarn craft, with its mental challenges and social connection and mindfulness, is good for the brain. It's a really good tool for networking and networking people together and opening up conversations about difficult topics, things like dementia and mental health, which is where I got into it. And it also networks the neuroscience community to the general public so that they can talk about their latest research. And I think it's really important to have to know as much as you can about what's going on in your brain is really good for you, and also gives hope when you hear about some of the wonderful research that's going on. It's sort of hope for cures for things that you wouldn't imagine could be cured. So that's kind of the background. And would you like to know how we do it?
Yeah. So what does the project look like? And what was your inspiration, I suppose, for bringing people together with yarn to demonstrate this?
Right. So if we talk about that bit first, it actually goes back quite a long way. My background, as I said before, my paid work has been as a laboratory scientist, so I know what brain cells look like under a microscope, although that wasn't my field of work. And I always did art as a sort of a work-life balance. And the same went for my friend Rita Pierce, who is a registered nurse. Rita particularly is actually very good with yarn craft. She crochets. I'll use anything, but we both like using recycled textiles. I come from a family where everything was handmade, and don't like to waste anything. And so we worked on a few projects together. One of them was knitting a jacaranda tree by getting people to donate squares of knitting it with sort of family memorabilia, the things that you pass on. It was a really exciting project. I just really love the community art, the working with other people and doing it together, and the textile and tactile part of it. A lot of that for me came out of my interest in sort of moving that way. I used to paint landscapes, so that was my art in the beginning, but I had mental health issues and sought counselling, and that's where I learned about art as therapy, or art therapy, whichever way you want to call it. And that actually helped me a lot in getting through my issues, and it also changed the way I did art totally. It just actually totally changed, and I started going more toward the tactile and the communal sort of projects, because that was probably good for my brain. I could see that it was good for me. I didn't realise, and I saw that people enjoyed it, but I didn't realise that it, how it really worked until Rita and I worked on a project with another artist, Hiromi Tango, who was exploring the therapeutic potential of art engagement, and she invited us with our medical backgrounds to make satellite brain structures and explore anything that we wanted to explore. So that was at our local regional gallery, Hazelhurst. And so Rita was a registered nurse in aged care, so she did something with dementia, and I did something with mental health because of my background. At the end of that project, we just both had these huge aha moments where we realised that what we'd been doing before, keeping our art life and our work life separate, maybe we could do a lot more if we sort of connected the two, because you could see how it opened up these conversations with the public about things that were so hard to talk about. I mean, Rita's case, working with people with dementia, she could talk about it so easily when she was knitting or when they were looking at what she'd built, and same with me with mental health. So we wanted to go on then. We didn't want to just stay there, so we started looking for something, and we were just very lucky that there happened to be an art science soiree at the Ultimo Science Festival that year. It was 2013, and we went along there with our heads buzzing with, just not knowing what we really wanted to do. But I think part of the project that night was that people should pitch an idea. So I said, well, I want to build a woolly walk-in brain built with many hands, you know, getting lots of people to donate knitted brain cells. I nearly fell off the chair at the end of the night when that was picked as the winning pitch. So it took off from there, basically. It was very exciting for us. And so with that, that's where we met the Inspiring Australia team, and they helped us network with people in the neuroscience community, because really we realised when we were doing it that we could provide this platform for people to talk about what they were doing. We didn't have the knowledge to talk about neuroscience, but we knew that it should be talked about. But what we were doing could provide that platform, and so with that one night, we found our neuroscience network, and it sort of started from there.
So tell me, what does it look like today? What are your activities?
So what it looks like today is we started off that first year. We did end up building a woolly walk-in brain, and then that's been every time. It's great because it's at a neural network, what happens is we provide scientifically informed patterns, so they're based on what a neuron really looks like. A neuron is actually the electrically active cells in the brain. They're not all the cells in the brain, but they're the electrically active ones that most people know about, you know, when you talk about synapses firing. And so that's what we get people to make, and we show how they connect, and, you know, just people start talking, but we often have a neuroscientist there. Either at a bigger session we'll have a neuroscientist sort of talking while people are crafting. At smaller ones we might all just be sitting around. There might be somebody scientific sitting there talking and knitting with public. Or it might just be us. Just a couple of us, but it just opens up conversations. I could probably give a good example of one of the very first workshops, because we had no idea at first. We learnt on the run about workshopping, and at the end of the first day we were absolutely exhausted, and a family walked in, and the little girl wanted to learn how to crochet, and we said, we want to go home. and he said, oh, well, you know, well, while we're cleaning up, Rita would sit down and teach her to crochet just for half an hour. And in that time the mothers helped me clean up and started talking. One of them started talking about her mother, who she was worried about, and her mother was from overseas, and she was worried that she had dementia and didn't know, you know, where she should go next or what she should do. And I said, oh, that's Rita's field. So Rita, we don't give advice to people, you know, like we can't tell them what's wrong, but she could tell her where to go to look for the right advice. And that's the sort of thing that can happen, just a little simple thing like that, where we should have gone home.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. Do you think there's something particular about working with wool and fiber that is different than some of the other arts you might use that maybe stimulate your brain differently?
I think that there is, in that, you know, the tactile nature of it, and, you know, there's colour, there's sort of memories connected there too. That sort of creates something for people. There's also the action of knitting and crafting that, you know, sort of does sort of mirror some of the things that you... some of the things you're doing, you're using different parts of the brain all at the same time. So you've got to you know, mathematically you're looking at a pattern, so you've got to process that at the same time as you're using your fingers to actually do it. So that's, you know, two different things at once. If you're doing it in a social environment, which is really, really healthy, all those things connect, and the nice warm feeling of knitting sort of knits into that as well. So you know, all those things are very healthy, I think, for brain health, mind health.
Yeah, wonderful. So you have an event coming up in the UK soon?
Yes, we do. We so the The art science soiree where the event started off, the woman who organised that was actually from Cambridge in the UK, and she went back there. So we've hooked up again, and we're going to recreate neural networks at the Cambridge Science Festival. So we'll be holding workshops throughout March, and we want to produce another big woolly rain installation of some kind. We've already, hopefully, there's some people already knitting in the UK, but if there's any UK members listening, we'd love people to start knitting now. You can access our patterns. I can give you the website to put on there at the Cambridge Science Festival, and they can access them, and they can, you know, if they're in the area, they can drop them in, or if they're not in the area, they can just post them. There's an address to post them to. And then we'll sort of knit them all together. Well, not knit them, but, you know, network them all together. It's all about networking, really. I mean, what the brain needs mirrors what you need in life. You need networking inside the brain, and you need networking outside the brain. So we make networks, and we make networks of people. We make networks of neurons. That's what we want to do.
So is it something you walk inside and, like, the brain is, like, all above you, or is it something that kind of is in the shape of a brain and you walk around?
In the installation that we made the first year, which, I mean, that was a huge push, a huge project, and we did build a walk-in. You could walk in, and it was around you and above you. It was actually built out of milk crates, but then had sort of all the neurons attached to that in the sort of pattern you see in the cerebral cortex after scientists have put labelled the cells with colour. That's what sort of looks like. That's what we were trying to copy. And it looked fantastic. And we would absolutely love to do that again, but really most of what we do is voluntary. We get very little sort of money anywhere along the line. We can't even really afford to update our pattern book. So if there's anyone out there with funding for us, we'd love that. So the brain, to do that big brain installation takes a lot of funding. So what we've done is, you know, bits of it have been installed different places. And sometimes, so just recently there was a festival in Sydney in September, October, called the Big Anxiety Festival, which was, really fabulous, getting that message out there about, you know, destigmatizing mental health. The anxiety is something that can be, you know, often can be helped if you look for help. And it was a fabulous festival. So we did two sessions there. One of them was in a library, quite small, and we just had a little, like, a whiteboard and some neurons networked across that. The second one was bigger and spent more time. And I really, the scientist in me loves getting the knitted neurons and making them connect exactly that, but like they should in real life, just not quite touching the dendrites, not quite touching the axon of the other neuron. That's my big thrill. And so we had a bigger installation there, but it wasn't walk-in. I mean, it takes a lot to make a walk-in one.
Right. Well, cool. Well, we will definitely send people to pictures and your website and look forward to sharing this with our listeners, and especially we've got a lot of UK listeners, so hopefully they can come by or at least contribute to the event.
Yeah, it'd be really great if we get to meet some of them. And I mean, I'm still waiting to find who sends the first neuron into Cambridge, so that'll be the exciting moment when you open up the first package. Not that I'm there yet, I'm not going over till a bit later, but Sophie, who's over there, is anxiously waiting for the first one, so she's running some workshops. Yeah, so we'll...
Oh, good. Well, hopefully we can get some going for you.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's pretty... I just think it's pretty crazy and awesome.
So I want to knit some neurons. Tell me what I need to do.
Okay, so the neurons for the Cambridge Science Festival, which is in March, we'll put all that up there. And if you go to Neural Knitworks... they have a pattern book, so they've got crocheted versions and knitted versions, and a no-knit version.
A no-knit
version? These are scientifically based So these are meant to actually look like neurons. So you can't just like randomly make something. They want you to make it
exactly right. Okay. And you say books, but they're PDFs.
They're PDFs.
And they're available for free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. We got to knit some neurons. And the deadline's coming right up. So yeah.
It's a really cool project.
That is cool. Thank you for that interview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're ready to magically turn some knitting questions into knitting answers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Howdy, girls. I am wondering what the difference is between adding a pattern to your favorites versus adding it to your library on Ravelry. I end up adding to both all the time and forget where I put it. Which should I use and why? Thank you, wonderful ladies, so much for all your help. Have a great day. Kayla from Oregon. That's a good question.
Hi, Kayla. Let's ask Casey. Well, no, my question is first, because I can answer this question, but is favorites different than queue?
Yes. So you can just favorite something. And actually now they have it set up so you can organize your favorites. So like, say I wanted to knit a cardigan and I've looked at different patterns of different, you know, like I have DK weight yarn and I want to make a sweater out of it. I can go through and favorite them and you can create bundles. So I can say, okay, here's all the cardigans.
Right. Okay.
That I've favorited. Will you like them? Maybe you're not ready to cue it.
Okay.
You're so not ready to make a commitment.
One step. You're commitment phobic on your cardigan sweater. Okay, so like maybe liking is one step before putting in your queue then?
Yeah.
Okay, and then library means you actually
own the pattern, own the book.
Right.
So I don't know if you can just randomly pick a pattern. I'm going to try it and put it in my library. I guess you can if you bought it somewhere else.
No, I'll tell you this as someone who sells patterns. If you're not logged into Ravelry, when you buy a pattern, like people can buy patterns through my Ravelry store, or I mean, most of my patterns are free, but they can buy patterns through my Ravelry store or my website. And if they're buying through my website, if they're logged in to Ravelry while they're purchasing through my website, which is a Ravelry shopping cart,
mm-hmm.
It will automatically appear in their library. But if they are not, you can't add it after the fact.
Well, you can. So I'm looking at it. You can add it to your library, but the actual pattern's not
available
there until you purchase it.
So it's not like in the cloud.
Right. Like I'm looking at some random pattern I just pulled up on Pattern Search and it gives me the options to put it in my library, but I haven't purchased it. So when I go to my library, if I pull that up, I'm going to be like, I don't have that pattern. So
why would it even let you add it?
I don't know why you would want to do that. Well, I guess you could do it. Like, say you bought it at a yarn store and you bought the hard copy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. That would be a reason.
Or you have the book, the physical book. So I use the library to put my books, my magazines in there. And so if I want to knit something like a cardigan with DK weight yarn, I do all my little filters and then I click in my library. I actually just did that recently just because
I have a video on that.
Yeah, and I just did that recently, and it was kind of cool because it pulled up some Vogue knitting from 2013 or something that I would never have pulled out and looked through.
No.
But
having the filtering capability, and I have all my magazines in Ravelry, and I actually updated it recently. And so I do have thousands of patterns to choose from. And, of course, I do not know what all of them are, but using that filtering technique. But, Kayla, let's get back to Kayla's question. She wants to know.
So the difference is your library versus your favorites.
Right.
So your favorites are just patterns that you like. Your library should be, if I were using it how I think it's designed, patterns that you own.
Right.
So.
She says she's adding stuff to both.
Mm-hmm.
And she forgets where she put it. You can add notes if you add something to your library or to your queue, at least. You can add notes, right?
Yeah.
So she's saying she's forgetting why she's doing things, but she can put in a reminder. Yourself.
And I think you can also put notes for your favorites too, because you can now create bundles, like I said. So like looking at different, if I see something that I really like that I think, oh, I might want to knit that later, I can put it in a favorite. It's like a file folder. Like, here's men's sweaters that I like. I'm going to put that in that folder. I don't own it, but I want to get back to it.
Right.
But hold on. Yeah. So in
you're testing something else out while you're on the fly. You're quick with this.
When you're, I kind of am a database geek. So when you're in the pattern search, you can search under availability. So it can be free in my purchase online or whatever, or in my library.
Oh.
So you can't search in within your favorites.
You can search your library, but not your favorites.
I think so. Oh, no. It's also in my favorites. You can search that too.
Okay, wow. So, there's no limit to Ravelry. Well, every time we start to dig around, we always find that there's more stuff.
Yeah.
But I always trust you to stay up on it better than I am. I use it for the same things over and over again.
Yeah. I just think the key is the library you want to keep. If it's up to me, which it is in my Ravelry page, I keep the library full of stuff that I know I own.
That you own, yes. I actually don't use favorites. If there's something I like, I throw it in my queue. And then I don't keep a lot of things. Do you keep a lot of things in your queue?
My queue is like sometimes when I'm procrastinating, I'll just go and resort by queue and think about things I'm going to knit.
Dreaming about knitting things. No, I think I probably have fewer than 10 things in my queue. And every time I go in there to find something to knit, I'll, you know, take one or two out because whatever the passion was at the moment that I put that in my queue, it's gone. So my queue is actually a really concise list of the things I actually do want to knit.
Yeah.
So and I don't have to organize it.
I have the same thing. And then I go back and I'll get like, this is too many things in my queue. I'm deleting these things.
But it feels like cleaning house, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then they created a new feature recently where you can put stuff like a goal, you know, like on Goodreads, the app that you keep track of what you read, you can have like a reading goal.
Yeah.
So they created a thing where you can have a goal for the year, how many things you're going to knit.
Oh my gosh.
And put a deadline on it. So then you can see at the end of the year how many things you knit in the end of the year. Yeah. It just came out. It's cool.
I'm going to have, you're going to show me. Well, can we link to it?
I think so. I think it's, I mean, it was on the homepage too, so we can.
Okay. We can link,
link
to
that homepage. Oh, it's called the challenge. Yeah. So when you're on
like
your
Ravelry challenge.
Yeah.
The challenge. Okay.
So when you're on your projects page, there's a little tab in the upper right corner that says challenge. And so you can click on that and set your challenge.
Okay. I hadn't seen that before.
So yeah, it's new.
Cool. I will. Yeah. I'm there. I'm on Ravelry every day because.
And it'll show what's in your queue. And like if you put a deadline on something that's in your queue, it'll show up here as one of your things that you want to finish.
Cool.
Which, I mean, it doesn't matter if you finish everything in 2 years.
No, it's supposed to be fun.
It's just fun. So.
Okay. We have time for another question.
Okay. Okay. Hi, Stacy and Casey. Assuming they work at the same speed, same hours, daily, weekly, who do you think is better suited for knitting professionally, project or process knitters? This is like a math problem.
A story problem?
Yeah. My sister has asked me about knitting a Celtic cabled Aran sweater for my nephew, her son. Since she'd be the one washing it and she's allergic to wool, what content should I use? Oh, let's answer the first word problem first. This is Sarah from Chicagoland, USA.
I don't think there's any question a process knitter is going to be.
Really?
Yeah.
For a professional?
Yeah.
I think a project knitter.
A project knitter's abandon things.
Well, if they work at the same speed and the same number of hours, I don't think it matters. Because if you're going to have the same rate of production, what difference does it make?
But process knitters are always. Well, let's go ahead and link back to that Art Markman story. Project knitters are always like, it's got to stay exciting for them, and it's got to.
But if there's a deadline involved as a process person in general, if I don't have a deadline, and I enjoy doing a lot of things, but if I don't have a deadline, it's not going to get finished. But if I'm doing it professionally and I have a deadline.
Okay, let me tell you. I have a video shoot coming up in a few days, and so I'm knitting. Like the sock tutorial that I have coming up, I'm knitting the same pair of socks, essentially the same pair of socks about 4 times for the samples for this video.
Yeah.
How are you on that?
Not good.
Okay. I think using that example, maybe I brought you around a little bit to agree with
me. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Okay. Let's move on to the next part of her question.
So again, her sister's asked her about knitting a Celtic cable Aran sweater for her nephew. She's going to be the one washing it and she's allergic to wool. What should she use? I'm not sure if it's limited to sheep fiber, so I'd like to stay away from goat, llama, etc. I use a lot of acrylic and I know how unforgiving it can be, especially against my own skin as I use it. Would polyester or a polyester blend be a good substitute? I wonder if she's really allergic to wool.
That's what the yarn harlot always says. I think it's the yarn harlot that always says people just haven't
had merino wool.
Right, right. But this is, did you say her name in place?
Yeah, Sarah from Chicagoland.
Okay. This is tough because I would never recommend an acrylic yarn for an Aran sweater, for a cabled sweater. You're just not going to get the give that you need for the cables, for any tension issues that you might have with the cables and switching from the knits to the purls and everything to look really good after blocking. So Casey says, make sure she's allergic to wool before you give up on wool.
I'd say like knit her a small thing out of merino and tell her it's not wool and see what happens.
Go ahead and put this in, you know, put this.
But have an EpiPen nearby.
Is that worth it? It's so...
I mean, are people truly... I'm sure somebody's going to write in and tell us, but are people truly allergic to wool or is it just scratchy wool?
It's scratchy. I think like the way the allergy it manifests itself is itchy skin.
Right.
So it's like this... We all would have the exact same reaction from scratchy enough wool, right?
Right.
Why are you scratching your neck right now? You're wearing a wool sweater.
But it's soft.
It's soft. Yeah, we're both wearing wool right now and we're fine. But there is wool that is scratchy enough that it would give all of us that allergic reaction. Mm-hmm. But of course, there are people, we're going to get the notes, we're going to get the messages from people saying, no, I have a real allergic reaction to wool. There might even be some kind of anaphylactic reaction. You're Googling that right now, aren't you? That's funny. I don't know. I can't recommend a polyester yarn. I don't think that there's going to be a good synthetic yarn. But if someone knows of one, we will certainly read the follow-up on the show. But I have never met a synthetic yarn that has the give of animal fiber.
Yeah.
But I bet there's also an animal fiber that is less likely to cause an allergic reaction.
What's that word?
Allergenic?
Yes.
Is that the word you're looking for?
Probably. Well, comedogenic. What is that?
I don't know.
It's from like some old pharmaceutical ad that I have in my brain.
Okay. Vocabulary. We'll have to look that up. But she's also saying she doesn't want goat, llama, alpaca, or like any animal fiber. But I bet there's an animal fiber.
But is it? Okay. So aren't there some that are fur versus hair?
Yeah. Jeez. I don't know enough about wool allergies. Casey's convinced that no one's allergic to merino if it's soft enough. I think you're probably right.
Yeah, but I agree. Like having a wool and cable knit sweater is just not going to be the
same. You're just asking for trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. You want it to be beautiful when it's blocked out. You want it, Or you can knit it up and then tell your sister, just wear latex gloves. Yeah, when she it's not for her sister
to
wear.
Oh, for her son. Yeah. Yeah, for her to wash.
And it doesn't need washing very often.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We're out of time for today, Casey. We both need to have some lunch. Yes. Casey, if people want to find you online.
My website is kcknits.com, the letter K and the letter C.
Okay. And if you want to find me online, there is, of course, the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel or verypink.com, and all my social media buttons are there. And that is it for this episode. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.